Okay, the next argued case is number 22-1379, Electronic Plastics Incorporated against Apogee Lighting Holdings, LLC. Mr. Williams, when you're ready.
Thank you, Judge Newman. May it please the court. Harken back to the earlier two cases today, we have, I think, two issues that you've already heard about this morning. One is we have PTAB deviating from the principle of party presentation and modifying the grounds that were actually presented by the petitioner below. The second problem we have in this case is the PTAB's claim construction errors in deviating from the actual invention that's described in the specification, as well as in one case a failure of the PTAB to actually explain its claim construction that it used to find the patents obvious. Let me begin, if I might, actually with the first point, because if the PTAB had correctly followed the petitioner's theory of the case, the claim construction error actually would have been irrelevant. The reason is because in this case, what we have is a LED power supply connected to multiple voltage sources. The petitioner's theory was that you would use this patent Realmuto, which described a multiple input power supply, and use that to power a different reference's LED. The problem is the motivation that they provide for that combination is the knowledge that in a transportation facility, there would be multiple power sources, making the Realmuto multi-input power supply relevant. That was their whole theory. And for that theory, they had to rely on applicants' admitted prior art. They said, because a person of ordinary skill in the art would have known that a transportation facility has multiple inputs, including a low voltage and a high voltage, therefore, you would turn to Realmuto. So that was petitioner's theory of the case. The PTAB abandoned that. Let me show you what I mean. In reply, patent owner obviously had complained to the PTAB about the use of admitted prior art in the grounds. In reply, petitioner explained explicitly how they were using an admitted prior art as part of their motivation to combine. This is at appendix page 1354 in the record. There, the petitioner told the PTAB that they were relying on admitted prior art as evidence of general knowledge and motivation to combine, and shows a POSA would know that a public transportation facility at the time would include a standard voltage source and a high voltage source from which public transportation vehicles draw power. That is extremely important. Their own theory, as articulated to the PTAB, was that it's the existence in that public transportation facility of this high voltage source from which public transportation vehicles draw power that justified turning to Realmuto. That's the combination that they proposed. The problem with that ground, the problem with that motivation, is that there is no evidence at all anyone of ordinary skill in the art would have attempted to connect to the high voltage power source from which public vehicles draw power. And in fact, their own expert admitted that a person of ordinary skill in the art likely would not. And that's for several reasons. First, you're powering LEDs. LEDs are very sensitive semiconductor devices. You need very controlled power supplies to them. And there's no dispute that in the transit facility where you've got a third rail or some other power source powering a vehicle, that power supply is not in any way suitable for an LED. You have to do much to that power supply before it becomes suitable to power an LED. So there's lots of problems that you have to solve to get there. The PTAB ignored all of those, ignored the experts' admissions that no one would have thought, this is again patent owners' admissions that no one would have thought to do this. And instead what the board did is change the motivation to combine and change the admitted prior art. So for instance, at page 43, this is in the final written decision, the board said, applicants admitted prior art teaches a high voltage power source as claimed, including a 600 volt power source for use in public transportation facilities, besides the third rail. So immediately, the board is switching the grounds on us. We have prepared the case as though the petitioner's theory was in play, that you would connect to the third rail. We pointed out that no one would do that. There would be no motivation to do that. So
appendix page were you just reading from?
Yeah, appendix page 43. These are citations from the final written decision. Judge Cunningham, there's another one at page 46. Where they say, the board again says, applicant's admission is not limited to a train facility's third rail. They do it again at appendix page 47. Applicant intended the prior art to include more than a source from which electric vehicles draw power. There's probably others, but it's replete in the final written decision. The board has to turn away from the third rail. And now they invent some new second power source that's high voltage in the public transportation facility that was nowhere in the ground that was presented. And as I said, that change certainly mattered a lot because our theory, because the patent owner was responding to the petitioner's theory, not to a new grounds of rejection that was essentially invented by the PTAB during this proceeding. It's also, I think, incorrect. Substantively, the board concluding that the omitted prior art included something besides a third rail is just not supported at all in the record. The source for that supposed admission comes from the specification. But if you read the specification, there's only two types of power sources ever discussed. There's the power mains that are coming into the trans facility, which could be three-phase. That's one of the examples of the power mains it talks about. Or it could be standard. It could be just a regular one-phase power supply. But that's one source. The other source is the third rail. There literally is no other source that's ever talked about in the specification. The board makes much of the different voltage magnitudes.
Does it talk about batteries?
Sorry?
Batteries?
The specification does talk of batteries. Never in the context of admitted prior art, however. Of course, some of these claims do cover a battery backup in the power supply. That's sort of incidental to the issues on review here, Your Honor, I would say, because what the question is here is would you connect to a standard power source and a high voltage power source? The battery is I think, important to some dependent claims, but won't turn the outcome of the case here. And again, the petitioner's own articulated theory of the case, as I read to you earlier, was you would turn to the omitted prior art because it teaches you that there is this third rail, high voltage power source, to which you would want to connect your light to, and another power source, and therefore you would want to use this room loop to a multifunction power supply. That was their whole theory of the case. Okay, let's see. There was another error that I wanted to get to, relating to the level of skill in the art. So, the board, I think, tried to hedge its opinion by not only changing the admitted prior art, but also changing the level of skill in the art.
Why didn't you challenge the board's definition of a person of ordinary skill in the art?
Can you repeat that?
Why did you not challenge the board's definition of POSA after the board's institution decision?
Yeah, well, so I, respectfully, Your Honor, I think we did. Admittedly, we didn't directly point the board to that 65-word addition that they made, but I think we did absolutely challenge that what the board added in that level of skill was the knowledge that you would need in order to actually effectively use the third rail as a power source. That, in our view, is what all that additional stuff is trying to
accomplish. Can you give me the page where you made that challenge?
Yes. Sorry, let me get that to you right now. Okay. Well, first let me show you on appendix page A44. This is the final written decision. The board acknowledged that we had challenged it. This is in the background knowledge of a person of ordinary skill. That's the heading of this section on page A44. The board says, the initial dispute over reasons to combine relates to the background knowledge of a person of ordinary skill in the art. The board acknowledged that we had challenged this. And in particular, the way we had challenged this throughout the proceeding was to point out that there was undisputed evidence that connecting to the third rail was not known to a person of ordinary skill in the art. I have several citations for that in our brief that I lay out, Your Honor, in our reply brief. But one, they start, for instance, at page...
I'm not sure if I'm reading this the same way you're reading it. You're saying that sentence right there says that you challenged and disagreed with the... pose a definition that was in the institution decision?
Yeah, this is the section where the board is explaining the background knowledge of a person of ordinary skill in the art.
Yeah, no, I see the section.
Yeah. And they acknowledge right away the initial dispute over reasons to combine relates to the background knowledge. And that's correct, because in our view, no one had the background knowledge to connect to the third rail power source. Let me show you, because that's in our briefs. Let me see, start with 542.
You can keep going. I don't mean to.
No, that's fine. I have a whole series. There are a whole series in our reply. We have a series of citations in our reply brief responding to their waiver argument where we lay those out. And I'm happy to talk about them now or on rebuttal. But we repeatedly point out that this was the fundamental flaw in the grounds that there just is not, it is just not true that there is some knowledge in the level of skill in the art as to how to connect these things to a third rail. There's not a single piece of prior art showing connection to the third rail to power anything, much less an LED. And in fact, as we indicated, and we pointed out to the board, their own expert admitted that it's not something that a person of ordinary skill in the art would have done. So I think it's unfair to say we never challenged it, but you know, the other problem is it wasn't clear to us why the board was even saying that in the institution decision. Why did it deviate from what the parties had agreed with the level of ordinary skill in the art? And it wasn't, frankly, until the final written decision that I began to understand what the board was really doing here was trying to shore up a failure in proof that had developed over the course of the proceeding on the patent on the petitioner's side. There was just no evidence that a person of ordinary skill in the art would have known how to do this or would have thought to do it at all in the first place. The other thing I was going to point out about the board's posted definition is its premise, the only basis, I mean, just substantively it's wrong, the only basis the board gives for that deviation from the party's agreement about what the level of ordinary skill in the art was that supposedly there's nothing in the specification that explains how a person of ordinary skill in the art would have gone about connecting to a third rail. And, you know, that's just fundamentally not true. Column 6 of the patent has, 30 or so lines devoted to explaining the precise circuitry you would use to take the high voltage power source of a third rail and make it suitable for controlling an LED power supply. The board just, which we pointed out to the board, by the way, but they never even addressed it and they never acknowledged it. They never explained why that section at column 6, beginning around line 9 of, on page 185 of the record, disproved their entire theory about why the level of skill in the art needed to be expanded. Okay, so with my remaining time, if I could just maybe turn to the claim construction points briefly. The preamble. So the preamble here, you know, the board essentially really tortured this claim trying to take the public transportation facility out of the claim. The problem is there's just no way to do that and render the claim coherent.
Is your position that if they were wrong about the preamble, that affects the result? Does it make any difference?
I think it does, yes, Your Honor. Again, because for two reasons. One is that it does influence the motivation to combine and what you would need to find in the art in order to practice this claim. Assuming that you need to find a public transportation facility.
Well, they found art that was fairly close. That's why I asked whether it would make any difference to your argument.
Yeah,
whether theoretically we say the preamble does or doesn't count.
Yeah. Again, I think it does because what you then need to do is find a high voltage power source in a public transportation facility that you would connect this thing to. And as we argued to the board, there is nothing in the art. The only art they have for that is Roberge. Roberge teaches an LED light and it shows it in a train tunnel. Okay, so that's fine, but it says nothing about what this high voltage power source is that you
I can see why it would be relevant to infringement. I have trouble seeing why it's relevant to obviousness.
Well, why it's relevant to obviousness? Because if the claim is limited to a high voltage power source in a transit facility, which is what we say, because the preamble should be limiting, if that's true, then to invalidate the claim, you've got to show me a combination of prior art that has a high voltage power source in a public transportation facility that you connect the light to. And there is no art that has that. Roberge does absolutely not teach that. Roberge says nothing about what the voltage sources are that are powering that light. It just shows a light. And Roberge teaches that's connected to power mains. Right? It doesn't say it's connected to the third rail. That's the whole key to this invention here, is connecting something to the third rail and making that work. Roberge doesn't have that. Nothing in the art has that at all. That's our point. That was our point to the PTAB. That's our point here. So yeah, I think it does impact validity. I think in this case, it's sort of irrelevant because petitioner's own theory would have required that anyway. So that's why I think the error there is not that important. But in any event, there's just no way to take out used in public transportation facility and not torture this claim, because what you're left with then is a light fixture having a power source, and that is certainly not the claim. The power source is somewhere else. The light fixture connects to it. That's what the text of the claim says. In my remaining time, I'll just point out the other claim construction that we dispute is the high voltage power source. And I have several problems with what the board did here. First and foremost, they didn't even construe the claim. On page A19, they tell you, we need not clearly delineate the scope of this term. So I don't even know why I lost. They didn't tell me which of these constructions they were adopting in order to find this thing present in the prior art. At the very least, I should be told why it is that this claim is practiced by the prior art, and they refused to tell me. The second thing I'll point out is this voltage, I mean, what really the board was confused about is voltage magnitude versus voltage source. Again, here the key is the voltage source. It's got to be this high voltage thing that's powering the transit vehicle. That's the key to this invention. The spec makes that clear. The title of the invention makes that clear. The board simply ignored all of that in reaching its conclusion. But most notably, I mean, the biggest error I can see here is this 250 volts that they put into one of the constructions. I mean, that comes nowhere. There's just nowhere in the specification. The specification teaches the opposite of that. Specification teaches it's only 277 volts and higher that could possibly be considered high voltage. The board ignored all that, finding 250 volts was sufficient. The reason they did that is because they found a piece of prior art that was put in the petition that talked about 240 volts. But you can't construe my claims based on what some other prior art reference defines as a high voltage magnitude. I mean, it's clear from reading when you read the final written decisions and look at what the board was turning to in reaching this conclusion, it's clear there are many different definitions of high voltage in the art, and therefore it's very important that you read the specification to know which one of them would make the most sense. The board just didn't do that, and that was the
error. Let's hear from the other side.
Yes,
we'll save you rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Gewirtz.
Yeah, good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name's Greg Gewirtz, and I'm representing Apelli here at Apogee. I believe there's a couple few issues that have been raised, and all of them, I believe, either the board got right, have been completely waived by appellants, or a harmless error. So starting with the claim construction issues, there was two claim construction issues which the appellants raised. One is whether the preamble should be limiting. The second is what's the construction of a high voltage power source. And with regard to the limitation of whether preamble is limiting, the board fully considered, we believe, the case law and the language got it right. It's not limiting. It's a statement of intended use where this light fixture is intended to be used in a public transportation facility. Could be used in a commercial building, could be used anywhere else. We believe it's clear. A statement of intended use is not limiting. It wasn't referred to in the body of the claim, public transportation facility. It wasn't addressed as an issue in the prosecution history. Bottom line is, it's not a limitation. But even if it was, the board found that we will apply it, and it's harmless error, because that limitation was applied by the board to the prior art, and it came up with the same conclusion. Roberge, which was the secondary reference in grounds 1 and 2, with Realmuto, very clearly discloses the use of the light fixture disclosed therein in a not only public transportation facility, but specifically a train station facility, just like the claiming. So the board said, look, it's not limiting, that's right, but even if it was, it's still not going to change our position. It's harmless error, because the same application by using Roberge, that was the reason it was there as a backup, clearly makes it invalid as obviousness. And similarly, in grounds 3 and 4, Roberge was the secondary reference. So under either interpretation, whether it's limiting, which we think is right, or whether it's as appellants now argue that it's not limiting, it was harmless error, because then it goes to the board's factual determination of what's actually disclosed in the prior art. And that issue is clear, and I don't think there's ever been an argument by appellants that the prior art doesn't disclose that. So that's that one claim limitation. The second claim limitation was high voltage power source. Now similarly, here the board got that right, but when it was initially presented to understand the background, in our brief, we didn't initially construe it. We didn't believe it needed to. We were in litigation, and it wasn't a big issue at the time. In appellant's position paper, when they requested a rehearing, they pushed and submitted their, in the preliminary response request for rehearing, they submitted the position. They said a high voltage power source has a particular definition, and they limited unduly, we thought, and the board found, to specifically an electrical power source from which public transportation vehicles draw power, and in a parenthetical they said, e.g., by example, the third rail. So when they made that position, we responded. We said, we think that's wrong. It's a preferred embodiment in the spec, but the spec does define it. And the board found, well, it could be based on the prior art, 250 volts or more. We cited to the spec and told the board when we responded two different times, we believe the spec says it's 277 volts or higher would be such a high voltage power source reaching that level of voltage. And so what the board said was, we're going to apply several. We could apply what they did, and the law allows them to look to what one skilled in the art would be and what's in the prior art. The board also said we'll go directly to the spec where it says 277 volts or higher for this particular high voltage power source, and we'll apply that. Or we could just use what those skilled in the art would think was plain meaning. Under any of those, it's invalid as obviousness under all four grounds. They said the one position we won't take, because it's clearly wrong, is the appellant's position of the construction where they reached into a preferred embodiment and said the high voltage source must be this source, the electrical power source from which public transportation vehicles draw power, e.g. the third rail. So the board did apply both 277 or above, specifically as the spec teaches, or 250 or above as they thought was reasonable to look at based on the testimony of those skilled in the art, the experts in the case, or plain meaning. And under that application, they said the claims are invalid under all four grounds as well. So we think the board got it right, and if the board didn't get it right, we submit it clearly would be harmless error. It goes to the factual analysis of the disclosure of the prior art. Appellant then switches to the person of ordinary skill in the art issue, and they accuse the board of being an advocate rather than a fact finder or a neutral party here. And we believe, first off, the board did the right thing and was authorized to do what it did. It took the exact definition of a person of ordinary skill in the art that was proposed that appellants stipulated to. And they then said, and such a person would have certain knowledge of problems that existed. The board drew based on the factual determinations of what expert testimony was provided, what the specification generally disclosed and go into detail, and what the prior art disclosed. So the board said, based on these things, the definition of one skilled in the art would include someone having that particular knowledge. At no time, Judge Cunningham, you asked this question, did they challenge it? At absolutely no time did appellants ever challenge that. That argument was completely waived. The board found this in its initial determination. Appellants requested a rehearing. They never made a comment about the board's determination of one skilled in the art.
What's your response to the page that he pointed me to saying that that was supposed to be a recognition that there was a challenge made of that?
It was a generalized statement by the Patent Office. It has no citation, no statement whatsoever that they challenged this. I looked at it. It's at 1843, I believe, in the appendix. Was that this citation? Let me pull it up. 1354, I think. And
I think 1354.
Yeah, 1354. I read it. It doesn't say that the appellants made a determination and challenge here. What was noticeably absent, Your Honor, is appellants said, well, I can find citations. They can't because he didn't. He didn't include in his brief any challenge. They accepted that the PTAB said one skilled in the art that had a bachelor of science degree in electrical engineering or an equivalent and a couple years experience in the industry, and they said, and would have knowledge of these type of problems based on expert testimony and the prior art, et cetera, and the specifications lack of detail. At no time did they tell the board in its request for rehearing, in its response to the decision, in its SIR reply, even at the oral argument, at no time did Mr. Williams or anyone in that firm put in writing or make an argument, we take issue with the board's finding of a personal skill in the art. So I know he did a citation. I don't believe it stands for what he said. It was a very generalized statement. And in any event, although I think this is very clearly waived for the reasons I explained, there's just no record otherwise, even if it wasn't waived somehow, the board was authorized to do what it did. It acted as a fact finder, and it said, the parties both agree on this point came from the experts. came from counsel. Two bachelors of science, electrical engineering, or equivalent, couple years of industry knowledge, and would have knowledge of these certain things. That's what the board's supposed to do. It went into the facts. It went into the prior art that was cited. It went into the specific testimony of Dr. Karlicek, their expert. It went into the specification and said, we don't find that these things are detailed out. So for any of these reasons, it was there. So it wasn't challenged, and it was supported by facts. It's substantial evidence. It's more than reasonable. We think, frankly, it's quite accurate. And that was the whole issue.
I saw their objection as trying to say, you have defined this person not as a person of ordinary skill, but as a person of extraordinary skill, and therefore the wrong standard was applied.
Yeah, I believe, Your Honor, there was an argument. You're correct. I think I saw that in the briefs as well. And I don't believe the board did that at all. I think what the board did is exactly what it's supposed to do. It went into determinations of what one skilled in art would know in making these decisions of validity on obviousness. And the board used quite a substantial amount of references to facts, both the prior art, the spec, and expert testimony. So I don't believe, while they made the argument, I don't believe it applies. I don't think the board exceeded any authority. I think the board did perfectly what the board should do and dove very deeply into the facts that were at issue and determined the type of knowledge that one skilled in the art would have. So I believe that was proper. And also, Your Honor, as I said, in addition to the properness and the factual support, it just simply wasn't argued at any point in time. They wanted a shot at that, and when it didn't go their way, they're saying, oh, let me see now what I could argue on this issue. And that's what they're trying to do in terms of saying that the person of ordinary skill in the art was something improperly determined. If they had an issue and they raised it with the board, it could have been addressed below, but they didn't. And this court would have had a record on which it could have addressed
it. It does seem strange to say that an ordinary electrician would know you can attach your LED to the third rail and not have it blow up in your face.
Yeah, I don't believe, Your Honor, the board went that far. I think what the board said on that was, I could read from the appendix at 401 and 402 in the initial determination. What the board said was that someone who was skilled in the art with this educational degree and two or more years of work experience in designing lighting fixtures and the same amount working with LED sources, well, that was undisputed. It was much more detailed. Said that person, based on the facts of record, they said, would have sufficient knowledge of experience, not of connecting it specifically to a third rail. What they said, they'd have knowledge of prior art problems such as equipment and techniques to provide a power system to drive light sources in a high voltage environment, such as a train environment. That's all they said there. And to account for challenges that may occur in a high voltage environment, such as voltage spikes up to 3 kilovolts, grounding issues, et cetera. They said a few other minor points. And on that note, what they did is they cited to a record of testimony and prior art and the specification, but not the specificity that counsel's arguing that one skilled in the art would know specifically how to connect it to a third rail in a train station. The board didn't say that at all.
So your opposing counsel takes issue with the high voltage power source claim construction, specifically the reference to 250 volts. Can you respond why you think that is appropriate or more so expand on the fact that there were these multiple, it looks like, constructions that the board was contemplating?
Yes. So when the board came and did that and they take issue, at that time the board was responding to the appellant's argument that it had to be limited. They were reading it from the spec to this electrical power source from which public transportation vehicles draw power, e.g. the third rail was the thing. The board said no. One would have, based on the record, knowledge of the prior art as well, and the specification is much broader than that. It doesn't say it's limited to that. That was one example. So the board pointed to certain prior art knowledge, and they cited cases how they could rely on that. Then the board said, but they here, now that's at issue, also the specification specifically disclosed a source of power that's 277 volts or higher. And the board, that was found in the patent specification, Appendix 185. And the board made in its determination of the claim construction that it could include that as well on Appendix 58. What the board said was, under that construction, and they explained where that's specifically in the specification, the citation to that, it's also invalid over the prior art. So they said it could be based on the knowledge of the art, because there's record evidence of that. It could also be this source of power that's 277 volts or higher. We're applying both, because that's exactly what the specification says. Under either of those, they went through an analysis and said it would be invalid over the prior art. So they didn't limit it only to the 250 volts or higher from the art. They applied both very clearly in the record.
So your argument potentially is that we can affirm in light of the fact that it wasn't just this 250 volt construction, but there were also these other constructions that were also examined. Is that, I don't know if I'm stating it accurately. But
yes. You said it, Your Honor, very accurately, and I'm just looking. I might have miscited the appendix page. I think the appendix page I had there was for the preamble limitation. There was a different appendix site, which I'll get for you in just a moment, where they said exactly that. The point's the same, that we're applying three different definitions here of constructions and appellant. It's invalid under every one of them. Whether it's 250 or higher, 277 or higher, or plain meaning. And that was at Appendix 20. What they did, they said they would not do, is the improper construction, which they thought was clearly wrong, which was to read in this from the spec that the high voltage power source had to be limited to this specific source from which public transportation vehicles draw power, e.g. the third rail. And lastly, Your Honor, just briefly touch on it because I know I'm just running out of time here on the applicant submission of prior art issues. Number one, when below, the only issue they ever raised with the board was whether or not we could properly combine the applicant submission of prior art, which we did in grounds 3 and 4, but not in grounds 1 and 2. And they never raised this issue about the scope being wrong or what we said. They never argued that. They argued that. So we contend here in our papers, and we think it's clear, that they waived an argument now, just like on the person of skill in the art.
I better tell you, I am not sympathetic to waivers. The board, the PTAB, is supposed to get it right. And when a new argument comes up in the course of the back and forth, they have an obligation to do their best to get it right. So just don't waste your time on waiver.
Thank you, Your Honor. So on that note, I was just going to mention that the board did get this right. They very clearly did. They properly determined, for shorthand, AAPA, okay, was based on facts. They cited directly to the prosecution history. And they said in the prosecution history of the 748 patent, there was an admission by the applicant's counsel. So what the board said, the fact, citing to the specification, and said, applicants argued when they were trying to overcome the prior art Smith reference, and they do the citation. It's in the appendix. They cite to the appendix at 1918, and that was the argument where the appellant's counsel, when they were getting this patent, said the prior art's anticipated by Smith, and they specifically said, the rejection cites the existing power sources in the public transportation facilities as meeting the preamble limitations. This was their counsel during prosecution. The applicant notes that this prior art is described in applicant's specification at page 5. That's at appendix 2068. It's in the 748 spec. And there, they said we have very clear support that the AAPA we're relying on was admitted by them, what's in the patent, as it was in the knowledge. And then they went on and said also, we cited the expert of Dr. Karlicek admitted that in a public transportation facility, a high voltage power source, Your Honor, and a standard voltage power source was known. So not only was it their admission, not only is it they cite to their own 748 patent and the application, there was testimony that was relied on And the board then properly relied, Your Honor, which applies to grounds 3 and 4. We didn't use AAPA in 1 or 2. It would be harmless error. And there were 7 other motivation factors the board used in its opinion to say why Realmuto and Roberge would invalidate it. So although the board could have relied on AAPA, there were 7 factors in addition of motivation for 1 and 2. But in 3 and 4, what the board said was it was proper to use a combination with the applicant's admitted prior art because they acknowledged it during the prosecution, it's in the specification, and it was clearly there. And therefore, the board got it right. And they very clearly got it right based on the applicant's own admission, the spec, and the record, and other facts, which is a substantial evidence standard. And lastly, as I mentioned, the harmless error is it doesn't apply to grounds 1 or 2 anyway. It's not needed. Their whole argument now seems to be the claim limitation has to include connecting to a third rail. And the board addressed that at length as well. It does not. And even if it did, they felt, I think you indicated earlier, Your Honor, that there's a pretty close reference and they found it would be obvious based on those facts.
Okay.
Your Honor, I have nothing further. And thank you all for your time this morning.
Any questions? Anything else for counsel? Okay, I think we have the argument. Thank you. Mr. Williams.
Thank you, Your Honor. Let me begin with the last point because it's clearly false to say that the board did not rely on AAPA for ground 1 and 2. It absolutely did, and it's because that was petitioner's own theory. You turn to page...
But if you look at the chart that's in there, it says AAPA for grounds 3 and 4, like the summary chart. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
In each of the decisions?
Mm-hmm.
So I want more on why you're saying that AAPA is grounds 1 and 2.
I see it's important, and I'm absolutely going to give it to you. Page 845... So the answer is motivation. That's the answer. Page 845, which is the board's final written decision. This is the board's analysis of Realmuto and Roberge. This is ground one. This is the ground that underlies all of the grounds of patentability in the petition. And I can read it to you, Your Honor, because I have it and I think it's very clear. This is under the heading, again, page 845. This is the board heads this support for motivation to combine Realmuto and Roberge. And then the second full paragraph says, petitioner properly relies on the AAPA as substantial evidence that a person of ordinary skill in the art would have known that a public transportation facility has
I don't see 845 in the joint appendix. I don't know if my appendix
just appendix page 45? Sorry, am I saying 845?
Oh, you're saying 45.
45, yes. Appendix page 45. I'm sorry.
Okay, I put an 8 in front of me. I'm
apologize.
I have no idea where you are. Okay.
Now I see the confusion.
Okay.
Appendix page 45.
Got it.
Okay, so here it is. Petitioner, this is the middle of the page. Petitioner properly relies on the AAPA as substantial evidence that a person of ordinary skill in the art would have known that a public transportation facility has a high voltage power source and a traditional 110 to 277 volt power source. And then they go on. There is no doubt. I read this to you in my opening section, but I'm going to read it to you again. It's so important. Appendix page 1354. This is the petitioner's reply brief addressing the same ground. Says AAPA was properly relied on. Sorry, AAPA was properly cited as evidence of general knowledge and motivation to combine and shows that POSA would know that a public transportation facility at the time would include a standard voltage source and a high voltage source from which public transportation vehicles draw power. My whole point of my argument here today is that petitioner's theory from the outset, as we understood it as the patent owner, because that's what they told the board, was that we're gonna combine Realmuto with this light source. Because Realmuto has multi-input power source, can accept multi-input power sources, and a person of ordinary skill in the art would know that in a public transit facility, there are multiple power sources, including one from which the transit vehicles draw power, and you would have connected those things to Realmuto. That was their motivation to combine. The problem is the board dispensed with that. As we went through earlier, the board on multiple occasions relied on the fact that there were power sources other than the third rail. We talked about appendix page 43, 46, 47, 48. They're replete with instances where the board said, oh, no, you don't have to connect to the third rail. The petition's theory is you can connect to anything else. It's a high voltage power source in this facility. That was not their theory. If that was the theory, we would have had a much different case below. The evidence would have been presented much differently. And if that's the theory that I'm now supposed to be responding to, then I ask you to send the case back so we can actually present evidence on that theory. They presented evidence that you'd connect to the third rail. We showed that you wouldn't, and it's undisputable that you wouldn't. There's no evidence in this case that you would ever have done that. No one had the level of skill to do that. Now, again, the board found that a person has the level of skill to do that in their POSA finding. They did that based on a just completely meritless sentence that says that because the spec doesn't teach you how to do this with no citation. That was their whole reasoning. The spec has a whole column that explains how you do this that they just ignore. So that can't be right. I did want to just lastly, in my remaining time, which I see I'm out of, point to some of the places where we actually raised the issue about, oh, by the way, I should say the submitted prior art thing, there was no point I could have objected to that because it wasn't until the final written decision that the board switched the grounds on me. Up until the final written decision, the board had been properly, as we understood it, in the institution decision, analyzing the grounds, which was based on connecting to the third rail. Only in the final written decision do we see these multiple instances where you no longer have to connect to the third rail. That's a complete change of the grounds, and so that's why I didn't object to it at any time before that. As to the definition of a POSA, however, Your Honor, which I don't mean to point, you could ask me, Judge Cunningham, about the places where we had raised that issue to the board. I just want to make sure I pointed out a couple of them to you. I think there are many. Starting at page 502 of the appendix, this is in our POR. We say, second full paragraph, contrary to petitioner and its experts' opinions, the configuration of the power supply of the 748 to accept a backup power source at or above 600 volts would not have been within the knowledge of a POSA. We point out some testimony from their expert on that point. Then if we go to page 543 of the appendix, we say there is no suggestion anywhere in the prior art relied upon by the petitioner that a POSA working on LED lighting would consider powering LED with a power source, such as a power source, or that there would be any motivation for such a person to do so with an expectation of success. As discussed above, Dr. Brettschneider, that's their expert, confirms the POSA would not attempt to power a fixture from the third rail because the POSA would not have been able to overcome the technical problems pursuing that path. Right? So we objected numerous times. We told the board there's none of that is in the ordinary level of ordinary skill in the art. No one in ordinary skill in the art would have done the thing that the petitioner says you would do that supported their petition. And because there was absolutely no evidence of that, the board clearly erred in finding otherwise. Unless the court had any other questions.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, counsel. The case is taken under submission.